We are all guests. We are all travelers. We're all a little lost, and we're all looking for a place to rest a while. Say the authors of this brave little book titled Radical Hospitality. I brought this book with me the first time I preached about radical hospitality in this pulpit in September 2004. There are people here who heard that sermon, but I promise I'm not preaching the exact same sermon, because I knew you'd know. But then, this notion of radical hospitality was a new frontier for me. Today, I'd call it my daily spiritual stretching exercise, emphasis on stretching. Making this kind of hospitality an everyday, embodied, spiritual practice is demanding, and it makes me pay attention. It calls me to move and act outside my comfort zone, and it forces me to notice when I fall short, which I do often, and then challenges me to do it again and again. What I've learned so far is how much I'm changed by every encounter, even by the ones that feel uncomfortable. Because you see, this kind of hospitality demands that you invite people, all kinds of people, into your heart. We sit together this morning in a space we call sanctuary. By that we mean it's both a sacred place and, we hope, a safe haven. As Unitarian Universalists, we welcome newcomers and guests to this space. We want them to feel good about being here, good enough to want to get to know us better and to let us get to know them. Remember, the radical hospitality motto is, "May I know you better." Funnily enough, though, after nearly 20 years of stepping into Unitarian Universalist pulpits most Sunday mornings, I had a real awakening the first time I walked into the Theodore Parker Church in West Roxbury as a newcomer in the pews. I was just a stranger in the pews. Honestly, it took guts to even show up. I knew no one except the minister. Well, of course, people smiled and welcomed me warmly, but I sat there anxious and afraid, and I'm guessing everyone here has had an experience of that somewhere. And no one sat in my pew. The worship began with words of welcome, especially welcome to the stranger. And I was amazed how good I felt hearing them. I felt safer than when I walked in. And I did feel welcome, although coffee hour is still a challenge. I'm repeating those words of welcome for you now, in case some ones of you need an extra welcome. This particular morning, this is what I heard. Good morning. If you're visiting for the first time, we extend a special welcome to you. Our congregation gathers from a variety of perspectives and religious backgrounds. We come together to explore religious ideas and moral questions, to grow spiritually, and to care for one another, our larger community, and our world through acts of service. Wherever you are on your religious journey, whatever your belief or doubt, your culture or circumstances, your sexual orientation or gender identity, everyone is welcome here. And we're very glad that you've chosen to join us this morning. Welcoming the stranger is a principle in many religious traditions, and certainly in ours it is. So when I first heard about the thousands of people, women, men, elders, infants, risking their life savings and often their lives to cram themselves on two small, often unseaworthy boats, hoping to find a safe haven in a country across the Mediterranean Sea, I was awed by their courage and desperation. The lucky ones washed ashore in Italy and in Greece, but many had died at sea, and those who did make it arrived with nothing. And then the migrants began flooding the land routes from Syria and the Middle East, from North Africa and Afghanistan and other countries where the conditions are so dangerous, it's worth risking one's life to escape. I was exhilarated to hear about those brave enough to welcome and support some of these refugees. I was really proud when Chancellor Angela Merkel made it clear that Germany would welcome large numbers of refugees fleeing the conflict in Syria and other troubled parts of the Middle East, Africa, and South Asia. And she urged all countries in the European Union to do the same. I remember saying, "That is radical hospitality." So they came. They came by every imaginable route, and they just kept coming and coming. And countries like Hungary wanted to wall them out, and other Eastern European countries, drowning in their own problems and poverty, said, "We just can't." And wealthier countries like Sweden wanted only minimal participation in this effort. Of course, I didn't need to look any farther than beyond our own borders to see the same crisis playing out here in the U.S. Human smuggling, treacherous crossings, and then, if asylum seekers made it across the border alive, horrible conditions, hostile treatments, and no guarantee of safe haven. There is precious little hospitality. I am grateful to note that much of that hospitality, certainly not all, is coming from our Unitarian Universalist brothers and sisters all along the borderlands. But it's not enough, not nearly enough. But because of what's going on here, I found Chancellor Merkel's initial welcome to be really radical. And why the United States' tepid and minimal response felt so disappointing. Here we are, a country made on the backs of generations of immigrants seeking sanctuary, now drowning in our own hateful attitudes and selfish motives. When Pope Francis visited Mexico in February, he said Mass at the Mexican-U.S. borders for thousands of migrants. He prayed for our brothers and sisters who flee to escape poverty and violence, drug trafficking, and organized crime. He acknowledged that many die trying to reach the U.S. And then, deliberately facing our country, the Pope appealed to the United States to open its heart, if not its borders, to what he sees as forced migration. Even he didn't dare to say, "Open your hearts and your borders." Even he did not dare to say what Jesus told his followers: "I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was sick and you took care of me. I was in prison and you visited me." I remember times when this congregation has done all of those things. Welcoming the Dorans, for example, a Haitian family, by offering material and moral support as they adjusted to life in Sudbury. And then in collaboration with St. Elizabeth's Episcopal Church, the Sudbury United Methodist Church, and the Refugee Immigration Ministry, First Parish helped to sponsor the Benabed family from Algeria. And even now, I note your faithful and ongoing support of Nate Benjamin, a prisoner at MCI Norfolk, who with your help attained his GED and now, I just read as you did, has completed his first two college-level courses with an A in history and a B in English composition. Indeed. These are excellent examples of radical hospitality. It is as simple and as complex as saying, "May I know you better." When I served here, we draped the banner standing on the side of love across the meeting house in front. Now, you're quite literally putting your hospitality on display again, and as it turns out, and again, your hospitality, and I'm talking now about the radical and inclusive kind, with your Black Lives Matter signs. I'm aware, sadly, ironically, how it hasn't been easy. I believe, though, that by displaying that message, and this is for me the crazy irony of it all, I believe that you are saying that all lives matter. It's too bad that the observers don't get the message. You're acknowledging that we have not fully crawled out yet from the cruel legacies of slavery, so that everybody can truly experience and embody a reality where all lives do matter. Which means that Black lives have to matter as much as all others. That's why we put the sign up. That's why we say, "May we know you better." That's why we lift up Black lives, because they never got lifted up to the category us. And they deserve safe haven in their own country. Just a few weeks ago, Jonas and I joined hundreds of others at a Middle Eastern solidarity dinner in Dorchester. And there we met and heard from close to a dozen Syrians, some now U.S. citizens, but others refugees who were lucky enough to have family connections here. Everyone who spoke, every one of them who spoke, still has family living in, or perhaps better put, trying to live in Syria. We heard and saw firsthand accounts of what it's like there now. One aid worker showed slides taken just last month of the crisis in Greece, of the people coming, landing, landing, landing. And frankly, the visual were unimaginable. And it was one slide after another, you know, slide, 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 each as bad or worse than the last. Today, it's no secret that the continuing flood of refugees into Europe is threatening the stability of the European Union. Even Germany is now feeling forced to set limits. Other countries are building walls, both literal and figurative, as a humanitarian crisis of enormous proportion spreads throughout Europe. And that doesn't even account for those who are trapped in their own countries in unimaginable conditions. Accepting the reality that sanctuary sometimes demands setting limits, is plunging me deeper into the meaning and practice of radical hospitality. In my naivete, I had overlooked this obvious reality. But of course it makes sense. I remember having to set limits with parishioners when something like an active addiction or a recurring mental illness required setting limits to ensure that both the parishioner who was suffering was safe, as well as the others affected by that person's out-of-control behaviors. Every parent knows the value of setting limits for our children in order to keep them safe. So, ironically, many of you know my husband is a librarian. He comes home last week with this little book, which he stumbles across, called The Limits of Hospitality. So the book is written by Jessica Robleski, and I read it pretty quickly and eagerly. And she reminds me that even the most willing and gracious welcome of a guest into a safe and friendly space requires a balance between generous openness and the safety of boundaries. To be honest, I should have known this. I had to be reminded. She gives examples, this one really struck me, of filling a balloon with air. And she says, if you fill it too quickly, it will burst violently and unexpectedly. I'm kind of thinking that's what's going on in Europe right now. Fill it too quickly, it bursts violently and unexpectedly. Fill it gradually, and it has tremendous potential for expansion. Not infinite expansion, of course, but a disciplined stretching opens possibilities. I think what I'm experiencing in my spiritual practice at this turning point is a disciplined stretching. Time to move out to a little further and be, frankly, a little more uncomfortable. In Europe, the genuine offer of sanctuary escalated the situation too quickly, and in the U.S., the relentless hatred and hostility on our southern borders made genuine hospitality virtually impossible. And as for sanctuary to the human tide of Syrians, Afghans, Iraqis, Eritreans, and asylum seekers from dozens of other nations, Globe reporter Michael Ignatieff laments that the U.S. isn't doing its fair share. Sure, the U.S. needs to send money to relief agencies, and we are. But so far, our country has offered refuge to only about 2,000 Syrians, fewer than the number who arrive in Germany every single day. With the terrible unfolding and collapsing situations both here and abroad, it's hard to hold on to the promise that radical hospitality can, as it says in the quote at the top of your order of service, can tumble us into the magical realm of personal transformation. Really? This situation could tumble us into the realm of personal transformation? I really had to give that some thought. Have I experienced that? And the fact is, of course I have. I remember feeling that kind of transformation just engaging with a female guest at a homeless shelter, talking about a book we'd both read. We were so engaged in the conversation, I never even thought about this person being homeless. I thought about what she thought about the book. And I cherish my ever-deepening relationship with my biracial birth family. even as I struggle to accept the unfair ways that we, each of us, in different ways, have been and still are treated differently, simply because of the ever so slight variation in our skin tones. When I talk about Black Lives Matter, it's really personal and intimate. And I know for a fact Black lives need to matter a whole lot more than they do now. For me to feel good about myself when my siblings, my genetic relatives, are being treated so poorly. So, coming to terms with reality, I think in my case, is transformative itself. It's really changing me. So, I've even gotten brave enough in West Roxbury to chat people up at coffee hour and discovered, most recently, another honestly transformative conversation that went on and on and on. So I know it happens. Now more than ever, I feel called to the practice, the real practice, everyday breathing, living, embodying practice of radical hospitality. And I'm still practicing. And I hope you are too.